Backseat Producers, episode number 123, My Big Fat Greek Wedding.
So we will have a brief reading of the rules for anyone who does not have access to Wave. And if you don't, send me an email. I've got a ton of invites. We can make it happen. All right, let's see.
My God. This you is, get totally wasted on this.
That's the idea.
It can get brutal pretty quick. All right. So the rules. Take one drink if someone calls David Adam.
Every time somebody gets sprung.
Finish your drink if the person getting sprung is female.
Every time David hasn't seen a movie.
Whenever Tony disagrees with everyone.
That's his hobby.
Whenever Tony says, I would have liked it a lot better if...
Whenever
Sarah drops an F-bomb.
Anytime Avatar The Last Airbender is mentioned.
If Neville Longbottom is used as an example of manliness.
If someone tries to discuss spoilers before the spoiler section.
If a comment is prefaced by pro tip, two drinks if the pro tip is inserted somewhere, but only the tip.
Anytime Tony 2 references a Martin Scorsese film.
When Daryl tries to skip the high-level review and go straight to a plot synthesis.
If Sarah tells an embarrassing story about Francis.
When David says, who? Cultural icon.
Whenever a host refers to an actor not by their real name, but by their character name in Harry Potter, Lord of the Rings, Star Wars, etc.
Gaming is used as a metaphor for the action in the movie.
A necessary correction of the plot synopsis occurs.
Now, okay,
now on to two drinks. Oops.
Whenever David doesn't recognize a movie.
Now, there was actually a discussion about this. Recognizing a movie is different than seeing a movie. And I believe, let's see, part of the discussion was, well, the first comment was by the great Mr. Chibi. What are you, crazy? Two drinks every time he doesn't recognize the movie, I'll be on the floor in seconds. All right. If Luke shows up in the chat room.
If the Fleshlight or any of its many sub-products are mentioned.
If the chat room has to correct one of the hosts.
If David has nothing to offer to this conversation.
If the hosts derail into a conversation about Star Trek or Star Wars.
Now, take three drinks.
If David hasn't seen tonight's movie.
If there is a guest host on tonight's episode.
If David threatens to show his ass to the chat room.
If one of the regular hosts shows up in the chat room instead of the show.
And finish your drink.
If tonight's episode is going to be about a comedy, better get liquored up beforehand.
When Egg Shen shows up, it ain't getting much better than that.
If afterward, on Tony's Lizard, Tony has lost 2 pounds or more, we want rewards too.
Quote, that woman in the car over there said Genghis Khan ruled the Mongols.
If there's an argument in the chat room about interpolation of the rules of the game.
If it is revealed during the course of the episode that any one of the hosts has been, quote, pre-gaming, unquote. All right, and there are your
official rules.
The official rules so as they stand.
So I'm here. Does that mean that there's an automatic three drinks?
Yes.
There is an automatic three drinks. This is true. This is true. And if Adam shows up in the chat room, there's more
drinks. Everybody's going to be wasted by morning.
Hey, this is Tony.
And this is Daryl.
And this is Julie.
And we are the Backseat Producers. It has been a while since you've been on the show.
It has. It's been a while since you conned me into it.
It's been a while since we've done an episode that hasn't been on a school night, you mean.
That's true.
Happy Skanksgiving, by the way. it's Skanksgiving.
Don't direct that at me.
Today is Skanksgiving. The day before Thanksgiving, because there's a lot of people that come in from out of town. They're at their parents' house. They want to go out and see their old friends. They go out for the night. They dress skanky. It's Skanksgiving.
I feel really old.
All right, so we've got a contest that will be over by the time the episode is released. We will have just ended one contest, but we're starting another one in just a couple of days. So by the time between the time this episode posts and the next episode, we'll have started a new contest. So check back at the contest page on the website. Let's see, other news. Oh, next week's episode, we're going to be doing Fight Club. We're going to have another special guest. If everything works out at this point, he's still scheduled to be on the show, so that's cool.
Is that a surprise special guest, or can you mention what maybe?
It's Darren. Cool. Yeah, Darren's going to be joining us for next week's show, if you know, unless something comes up. But at this point, he's on the roster for next week's show, and we don't have anything planned past that. We'll have...
Let's go down the list a little bit.
Well, we've got... We have... The episode after that, we don't know what we're doing, but the following one, we've got a short list of movies that we're working on, because that will be the Christmas special.
Yeah, you should start doing some Christmas movies for the last couple
we'll be weeks. We'll be doing 2 weeks
Bad
after...
Bad Santa.
No.
Silent Night, Deadly Night.
No. We'll be doing a Christmas movie 2 weeks after Fight Club, because that'll be released right about Christmas time, so... Anyway, this is boring, and you guys aren't talking. So, tonight, we are talking about...
My Big Fat Greek Wedding.
And I'm drinking ouzo in honor of the movie.
He's already...
Oppa!
Oppa! Bottoms up!
Oh, my Lord.
Oh, yeah.
And it starts.
Already.
All right, so, high-level review.
I enjoyed this movie quite a bit.
I love this movie.
It's a good movie. I wasn't sure what to think of it when I originally saw it. But it's a great movie. It's. I got nothing bad to say about it at this point.
At this point,
to tell you the truth, I get critical. That's what I do.
I would say this is a better family comedy movie than Home for the Holidays, which was last week's program. I mean, this one actually has a plot line. It has likable characters.
I'll tell you the big difference between. Last week's movie and this week's Home for the Holidays and My Big Fat Greek Wedding, they had the same quirky family with all the different weird oddball characters.
Yeah.
But in this movie, it was more respectful.
Yeah, it wasn't mean-spirited.
No, it was Home for the Holidays had a much darker tone to it. It was more in the realm of like a black comedy. Where this is, the quirks just bring out the characters,
right?
But it's fun and it's never done mean spiritedly. Even the quirks that seem really really weird aren't terrible.
No, they just add more to the charm and the fun of it.
I mean,
we all have some weird relatives occasionally pop in for holidays, but you know you still love them at the end.
Yeah.
They're not horrible. They're not setting the house on fire or something like that.
Right.
Or
throwing turkeys on people.
Right. And, or fighting in the streets.
I mean,
that gets a little overdone at that point.
All right. So let's go ahead and jump into the acting.
Mm-hmm.
Was this... I believe this is Nia Vardalos.
Yep.
She wrote the film.
Yes.
And it actually started out as a one-woman stage play.
Mm-hmm.
And...
It was picked up... Tom Hanks and another heavyweight saw the stage play and helped her get it produced.
Rita Wilson, his wife,
saw
it,
right,
and said, "Hey, Tom, you need to do something with this.
Yeah,
we need to
help this out."
Right.
And they actually helped her get this movie actually produced. And the fun thing is, they produced this movie, made this movie for only $5 million.
Oh yeah,
it's some ridiculously low value. But it turned into a huge sleeper hit.
And I saw that it actually, at one point during its theatrical run, it broke the record. And I don't know if it still holds the record, but mm-hmm. it had made the most money of any movie that had never been number one at the box office during its theatrical
run. It's got a huge set of legs on it.
Yeah, it broke the previous record that Dances with Wolves had in that. Because it never hit number one at the box office. It was a sleeper hit. It came out. It stayed low in the box. You know, it kind of maintained in the box office, but it never really
and slowly
peaked.
Kept gaining an audience all the time, even after theatrical release. when it went into pay-per-view and Showtime, HBO, and all the others, it found another audience. When it came out on DVD, it found another audience. And when it went overseas, it found a huge another audience, too.
Well, and it was an HBO Films production.
Mm-hmm.
So you almost have to wonder, you know, during the course of it, they probably picked up the movie. Mm-hmm. I mean, HBO has their own outlet for making the movie. A $5 million movie
is a TV budget.
They could have gotten away with showing that on their station,
mm-hmm.
got some DVD sales out of it, and they would have probably, that might have been their plan. But the movie was a lot better than that. It was a lot better than
a director video,
a director video movie, yeah.
Yeah, and again, the strength of this thing is, again, the script by Nina van der Ross and her acting, since she'd been doing this as a stage play for...
Nina Verdalis.
If she'd been doing this as a stage play for so long, she had the parts down really tight.
Yeah, yeah. Her acting was really good in it. Her facial expressions were fantastic.
Well, also, yeah, her transform from frumpy girl to... Sex Kitten,
yeah.
was quite a change, and you know, we, of course, we see it in the compressed timeline of the movie. But when she decides, you know, like, I'm going to suddenly make something of myself, and cuts her hair and ditches her birth control glasses and starts wearing a little more form fitting clothes.
Yeah, she's not dressing frumpy. She's putting on makeup. She's got her contacts and starts actually doing something with her hair.
Yes.
You can speak. It's all right.
I know.
And again, she transforms from this this little shrinking violet to this glorious rose.
Mm-hmm.
And then all of a sudden, the guy she's been kind of like her secret admirer suddenly is not so secret anymore. He notices her.
Right. You want to say anything?
I have nothing to add at this point.
Okay, if you're gonna say it right. I have nothing else to add to this conversation at this time. I have nothing to add to the conversation at this time.
Another great actor, Michael Constantine, as the father. Perfect. Yeah. I mean, the guy just goes
fantastic.
Out over the top of wearing his ethnicity on his sleeve. I mean, the house, everything in it, the whole Greek ethos that he has.
One of my favorite bits that he did in the movie was the whole. Any word I can give you the Greek root for, all language comes from the Greek,
including kimono.
Kimono. Kimono comes from kimona, which is
the robe.
It was cold. Was winter,
mm-hmm.
and it's cold in winter, and you wear a robe. Kimono.
There you go. Thank you. Hamonas.
Thank you, Rich. We've got the chat room backing us up here.
Yes. Take another drink.
All right. I will. Thank you. The rest of the family, I love the performances of mom,
the mom's
dad,
awesome.
The aunt.
And Joey the sister, Fatone. Yes.
Joey Fatone was surprisingly good in this movie. I thought it was a lark that he was going to be in this movie and that, you know, somebody just gave him a role. He was really good as the cousin.
And the other, the cousin with the boobs. Your big-ass girlfriend. I love her.
Yeah, they're all, but all their back and forth bickering is never goes for the throat. It's always like a poke in the back.
It's a sibling rivalry. It is a sibling fight, and it's the biggest difference is those are the fights that you could see them having when they were like
10 years old.
You know, like 14, 15, 12 year old, something like that. Not when they're in their 20s, which is just as funny because that's what they are. And then he still goes running to mom when she's picking on him. The one performance in the movie that it just didn't. It almost seemed like he was kind of phoning it in. It was Ian, the boyfriend, John Corbett.
Yeah,
I don't know. There was just something about his performance that just it almost seemed like he was just kind of. Leaning back, watching the scene unfold.
Well, I think that's part of his character, though. I think it was part of his character.
It is, because he is the outsider.
Mm-hmm. I got that as he was just following his upbringing. I mean, when we see the scene with the two parents and everything, they're like as stiff as boards.
Yeah.
Compared to Tula. And they don't know how to take... She doesn't know how to take them, because she's used to all the back and forth. And they're sitting at dinner, and like there's this huge volume of silence going through.
Yeah.
And then, of course, when they meet the folks, it's even more like the clash of civilizations here.
Oh, the culture shock there was incredible. And also where we are introduced in the movie to Uzo.
Opa! Have another.
And a bunt cake.
And a bunt. The cake bunk. And bunt.
Bunk. 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 Cake. Bunk.
You don't eat meat, I fix lamb. It's a fun... It's like I say, you get into the whole spirit of the thing real easy. This movie kind of sucks you in. Slowly but surely. And then after a while, you're just rolling along with it. Like, what next outrageous thing is going to happen?
Yeah. And one of the things that... One of the things that's cool about this movie is... Yeah, they focus on the Greek culture and poking fun at the Greek family. At the same time, any family that is strong in their ethnicity, whatever it is exactly like this.
I'm Greek and I'm proud.
In their ethnicity. I mean, my family's just as crazy, just in a different way.
Yeah, they are.
They're
just into their gossiping and everything. I mean, everybody's family has some weird little quirk that you can sit back and laugh at.
Yeah. But what I was going to say is even, I remember during the advertising of the movie, and it might have been in the trailer, I could be wrong about this, but I think it was in the trailer, when they showed the title card for My Big Fat, and they showed a bunch of different ethnicities, Irish, you know, Italian, African, and they just showed a bunch of it, and then it slammed in Greek wedding. And I thought that was interesting because they pretty much, you know, said up front, look, everybody's family's a little crazy. This is just the family we're presenting.
And of course, in this movie, they throw a little over the top just help it along there. I mean, when you see the house they live in, you know, it looks like the Parthenon. It's got all the Greek
flag painted up.
Yeah, just as he said, just so you
would. Statues of the gods.
Right. And next to all these rather drab suburban ranches and Tudors.
Yeah. All right, so any other thoughts on the cast performances?
Cast performances were pretty much wonderful. There's really nothing really you can really fault them on.
No. Lainey Kazan and Andrea Martin. That was... Lainey Kazan was Mom, and Andrea Martin was the aunt. Mm-hmm. Thanks, Rich, for pointing out the names. Fantastic performances from both of them. Just really over the top. And I thought it worked perfectly for this. Do you have something to say?
No.
You're just looking around like you have something you want to say.
No.
All right.
Because I didn't want to be wrong.
It wouldn't
have mattered.
It's okay.
That's right, I forgot.
We can edit. By we, I mean Chris.
The best friend, Ian's best friend, was her husband in real life.
Yeah.
That's a little trivia.
And his real name is Ian.
Mm-hmm. Like Ian Gomez or something. Like
mm-hmm. All right. So do we want to kind of step through the plot?
Yeah, it's definitely good for a long here.
So tell us what happens in the movie.
The whole thing?
Start from the beginning.
Oh, I don't want to do the whole thing.
Well, just pick up a part. We'll jump in.
Pick up a part and just go with it.
It starts off with this little frumpy girl going to work with her dad, and you know, she just doesn't want to be there. This isn't the life that she wants, and... wants to do something better, but when she approaches her parents about it, because she's still living at home even though she's 30, dad is totally not into this idea. She needs to be Greek, and she needs to get married, and she needs to pop out a couple kids, and that's what she needs to do with her life.
And feed the rest of the Greek culture, too.
and they kind of give you a layout of the family, too. She has an older sister who's 33. She's 30. Her sister's 3 years older than her. Has three kids.
Mm-hmm. She got married, she got married. Did all the expected things that their parents wanted her to do, and she's happy with it.
And what was funny about her when the first time we see her, she walks into the restaurant and she's doing something, but she's talking, and she has that really strong stereotypical Chicago accent, totally not the Greek accent that the rest of the family has. She's like moved beyond that, and she's into that strong Chicago, that Chicago accent.
And of course, the whole herd comes in at one time and starts running around all over the place. yeah. who's starting the chaos or that early in the morning.
Yeah, we get a really good idea of the family. They kind of use that scene to introduce us to the family
Gus and
the
mom
whole
and Nick and the. And the sister and the kids and
Nick,
the
cousins.
Yeah,
cousins.
Nick and Nicky.
Yeah.
Which was just
I couldn't
great.
Think of his name, so we called him Nicky, too, just to keep it consistent.
No, it was Marissa.
Yeah, one of my good friends is Greek, and mm-hmm. she said that it's tradition that the boys get named after a certain grandfather, mm-hmm. and the girls get named after the certain grandmother. So if you have a whole bunch of cousins in one family, they all get the same name because they're all named after the same people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So that's why in the one scene at the house, Nick and Nick.
And Nick and Diane, and Nick and Diane, yeah. and Nikki, and yeah, that's exactly why.
So she starts out in the coffee shop, and she's bemoaning her fate, and then suddenly she notices this rather handsome man sitting at the table, and at that point her life starts to change.
Right.
Yeah. Well, they give you hints that she has aspirations of going back to college. Her sister found a brochure for a college mixed in with some of the menus, mm-hmm. and that, you know, they kind of lead you that she's looking for a way to grow beyond.
Well, she's trying to get out of her she's trying to find an exit point for this dead-end existence.
Right.
And we get the idea also that her brother wants to grow a little bit, too, because he's showing Gus, you know, hey, what do you think of this new menu design?
Right.
So you see he's got some art aspirations in there.
But really, that really doesn't show up until
a little later. But
after she kind of makes her breakout, mm-hmm. and he's kind of inspired by her.
Right, but he's already working around the edges there. He's trying to test the waters here. And of course, Gus sort of like blows it all off. He's just too wrapped up in his own stuff.
Yeah, and he's wrapped up in what he believes is the culture that the family should follow.
Yeah, everything's working, so why do we want to change it?
Right. Yeah, and he's very worried about his daughter that because, you know, in his mind, her perfect existence is she's going to get married, she's going to have a lot of babies, her husband will take care of her. Barring that, she's not going to leave the house, she'll be here to take care of the family business. Because, you know...
Yeah, he's got her
that's,
life...
That's the plan B. Yeah. He's already got her life and her plan B already figured out. What was really funny about that, though, is the way they laid out their ages. Nick, her younger brother, is only 1 year younger than her. And they keep saying, oh, she's so old. And when Nick says he wants to do something, they're like, relax, you've got plenty of time.
Yes.
It's, you know, don't rush it.
Well, that's true. I mean, you got biological clocks clicking. I mean...
Yeah, but they're always. He's always want to tell her, "You're so old. You're so old." I mean, like, good lord, dial it back, Dan.
All right,
and so, of course, she does look rather old in her whole appearance.
The beginning of the movie, she does not look good.
No,
she looks kind of rough.
And we watched it last night. Tony goes, "That's an old 30."
Yeah, because they come out and say she's 30. Like, yeah, that's an old 30 there. Even when they gussy her up toward the end, she still looks a little older than 30. But
well, then at that point she starts to think, all right, well, I'm going to get this. Well, she finally convinces her parents she needs to go back to school. Or she's going back to school.
She convinces mom. And then
first.
Mom is the neck that turns dad's head and makes him change his mind.
that was a great line. He is the head of the family, but I am the neck, and I can turn the head.
Whichever way I want. So, you know, she finally gets her father's blessing to go back to college, and we see this little montage of her starting to go to class and starting to kind of break out of her shell somewhat.
And she's, you can see that she's making up for lost time.
Right.
Also, because there's a scene a little bit earlier where she's talking about growing up and going to Greek school and mm-hmm. and how she felt like an outcast as a kid.
She wants to be one of the pretty little popular moms eating their Wonder Bread sandwiches.
Right. She instead of going and sitting by herself, she invites herself to the table with
the cool kids.
The other girls who are all blonde.
Mm-hmm.
she pulls out her lunch, and if you notice, what she pulls out is a sandwich. Which is, I mean, it was really great that she's finally, you can see she's really working to establish the identity.
And by this time, she's also made the appearance changes, too.
Yes.
Again, cut the hair, get rid of the birth control glasses, getting a better wardrobe that more or less kind of complements her figure instead of just covering it up.
Right.
I think Daryl's really fascinated with her wardrobe.
Yeah, it was.
She looked good after she changed. She did.
Yeah, after she started when she took off the sweatsuit and started wearing a dress and a blouse, and like, whoa, there's a woman under there.
All right. So from there, she goes. She starts working at.
Well, her aunt, who runs a travel business, is looking to spend more time, or she's a little overworked. And she wants to, they come up with this plan to essentially get her in there so she can redo the computer system in the travel agency.
Right.
And eventually they convince Gus that it's his own great idea.
Right.
And then she takes over the travel agency.
Yeah, the neck turning dead.
Yes.
Yeah. So she's working at the travel agency and he walks in.
Well, he walks by several times, noticing her each time. And finally, he bumps into an old lady outside the travel agency who thinks she's being attacked and, like, beats the crap out of him with her handbag. And he stumbles inside after that and finally asks her name. And at that point, their relationship starts to form. Well, one thing leads to another. They start spending a little more time with each other and... Their dating starts getting more and more intense, but it's still somewhat of a forbidden fruit for her because she every time she comes home from the date, she has to be dropped off about a block or two from the house, so they don't get the idea that she's going out with someone who is not Greek.
Right.
At first, I thought that was because she was embarrassed by the house.
No.
And I was like, well, he's still seeing the ugly house. Yeah, that makes more sense.
It's she's embarrassed. Yeah.
Hiding the parents.
She's hiding from the parents. Yeah, she's hiding him.
Yeah.
She's not hiding them. She's hiding him.
Right, because she isn't ready to fight this battle just yet.
Well, and she wants to make sure it's worth fighting, mm-hmm. too.
Because he already knows that she has a rather quirky family.
Well, and he's met them. I mean, he's seen them.
Well, yeah. He's
been in the restaurant.
She's also been describing... She's been describing them to him in painful detail. So the big day comes then that she's going to drop the bomb that she's been dating and...
They get busted. Somebody sees them.
Well, it starts... It's
grapevine.
Yeah, Greek grapevine came back and told him, yes, he's not Greek. And at that point, she has to spill the beans and admit that he's not Greek, and he's going to meet the family. And then we have the big meet the family scene. And that's where it gets kind of interesting.
Yeah, to say the least.
I think that's when Dad confronts him. And how dare you date my daughter without my permission, and all this. then they're still dating, kind of.
Yes, I do. She gets the once they get Dad all calmed down and used to the idea, again, the pressure comes off.
Dad starts trying to set her up with some of his friends,
right.
Who are all completely obnoxious. And
well, they're your typical, stereotypical, something that Dad would pick out.
Yeah. Yeah, because, I mean, well, and he's probably also giving them expectations of how it will end. You know, this will be your wife. That's why I'm setting you up, you know.
Yeah, when you get over to this obsession with this Ian fellow.
Right.
So eventually they get engaged. She doesn't pick the nice little Greek guys.
Well, after this dating thing has now gone on for a while, Ian gets serious. And after she attacks him, after he takes her home to his apartment, he pops the question. And... then we launch into the second part of our story here of the big fat Greek wedding. Now, of course, the family is now both relieved and horrified at the same time. Relieved that, oh, I thought she was never going to get married. Oh, that's finally happened. Like, gee, thanks, people. Oh, but he's not Greek. Oh, what a tragedy. But we're going to make him family anyway. So there you go out the whole... the whole side of her family is now is in this Greek conversion process.
They're not only going to convert him from being Protestant
to Greek Orthodox,
but they're also going to convert him from being white bread,
yeah, Wonder Bread, to a Greek boy,
to Greek, yeah.
To Muskaka.
Muskaka. And of course, the brothers have the brothers and the cousins just have a wonderful time with him
in translating Greek.
Translating Greek, they're always giving him the absolute wrong translations for things.
I have three testicles.
How do you say? Let's go in the house to eat. No, you just say this. Oh, I have three testicles. And of course, everybody looks at him, like, oh, okay, now we know what we did.
I keep getting distracted by the chat.
It's distracting.
Yes, it is. You got to learn to
stop looking at it.
At least they're actually following the conversation. And they haven't broken off into something else. At some point,
we're holding their attention.
Their conversation will actually go in a completely different direction. They'll be talking about something completely different.
Yeah. So then we go through the entire pre-wedding nuptials and meeting the family, and Ian's family meets her family, and there's another big culture shock there. That's even probably the most fun part of the film.
She thinks she's bringing his parents over for a nice, quiet dinner.
Their idea of nice and quiet. Yeah,
what are you doing, Mom? Peeling potatoes. But I peeled some this morning. We needed more.
Yeah, she's got about a whole kitchen full.
There's just the four of us. No, I invited the family. What?
Yeah, all of them.
And what I love is when they pan back and show the food, and it looks like she's prepping a kitchen like at a restaurant with all the fruits and
the
vegetables.
Lamb shows up at the back door.
The lamb.
The guy, yeah, brings in the fresh killed lamb, and they all are wooing over it. Oh, it looks so great here. Like, it's where now we get the big culture clash and the family of horror. Like, what the heck is this guy gotten himself into? Like,
the aunt with her story about the tumor.
Oh, yes.
Those are twin. Oh, my God.
Those are my twin.
Herbopsy.
And you know what it was? It was my unborn twin.
It had teeth and hair.
And a spine. Oh, I've lost it there.
When this movie came out, that really did sound really freaky, but now it's all over the place. That happens all the time. Ew.
Ew is right. But yeah, 2002 was such a dark era.
The advancements in the last 7 years are astounding.
Yes, we're approaching the singularity at light speed.
All right, and it's during this that Dad also introduces them to the in-laws, to Uzo.
Oh yeah,
there's a great scene where they're just slamming it back, not thinking it's much stronger than wine.
Yes, it's the strongest thing they think they've ever had. Ah, this tastes like licorice. I'll have another one. And another one. And another one.
They start seeing everything all dizzy and the crazy grandma yelling at them about being Turks. And
yes.
Kids pulling her in a wagon.
The crazy grandma who is attacking her own son for being a Turk. But Mom, the Turks are our friends now.
So it just gets kind of, the whole dinner scene is kind of like the high point of the movie right there, because after that point, when we actually get to the wedding, it's kind of like anticlimactic.
Yeah, it does kind of take a step back and plays more on all the different stereotypes. The one that we missed that actually does come up later is Dad with the Windex.
Yes, Dad and his Windex.
He can cure everything with the Windex. At one point, you see him having a conversation and he's soaking his elbow in Windex.
He's always got it near a bottle of it nearby. He just sort of like pulls it out of thin air and whenever somebody needs it. And of course, during she's getting ready for her wedding, she gets a big sit on her face. And of course, it's a huge panic. And during their ride from to the reception, he mentioned, "Oh, I had a big zit on my face too. Well, what'd you do about it? Well, I put some Windex on it."
Yeah, it's the one cool thing about Ian's character is how naturally he just accepts them all. Mm-hmm. He knows that they're crazy. She's embarrassed by it because she knows how his family
is so understated. Yeah.
Well, they're crazy in a different way. They're that quiet crazy.
Well, and there's that one scene where right after they're getting engaged And her dad is just freaking out. I can't believe she's marrying somebody who's not Greek, and he didn't ask me, and what's my little girl doing? And I don't know that he's from a good family, and he's a good boy. I just don't know. And she goes to Ian and says, let's just run away. Let's just run away and get married somewhere else. And he won't let her because he's like, no, it's your family, and they're important to you, and we have to get married with them. And that's when he does the whole going through the Greek Orthodox baptism and everything.
Well, Disney also say something like, they're alive.
Yes.
They're, you know,
they're so alive.
They're so alive. Because, and making the direct comparison, his parents are dead.
Rather,
they're breathing, but they're not living.
Existing.
Yes.
They think a Guatemalan is the same as a Greek.
So, again, we get down to the point of the whole wedding thing and the reception. And that's pretty much where our movie kind of starts wrapping itself up, as that they've gotten through it through all the trials and tribulations, and they're married, and they find out that during the reception that Gus is given a wedding present of a considerable size. It's a house! Of course, and again, we find out in the last few scenes it's the house right next to his.
Yeah, and it's one of those things that, you know, but if you would have found that out earlier in the film, it would have seemed more tragic. But by the end of the movie, and I think really what the movie is about, it kind of brings Tula on this journey from being completely embarrassed by being Greek, by her family, and come to find out that one of the things Ian really loves about her is her family. And he's great with it. You know, he's very accepting of them and all their quirks. You know, he's vegetarian, but the aunt goes, you know, oh, he don't eat no meat. That's fine. I give him lamb. He doesn't say anything to it. He just lets it roll right off his back. He's enjoying.
I want to see his first dinner at her house, though.
Yeah.
When he won't eat the lamb.
Yeah. She'll shove it down his throat.
Well, I think he probably would.
With Nick standing right behind her. With Nick standing right behind him. Gonna kill you.
I'm gonna get your kidneys out. Oh, just kidding. No, I'm really gonna kill you. It's a fun movie to watch. I mean, you can't really hate it.
No, and I mean, it's not high art. It's not, you know, there's not a lot of grand depth to the movie. The message is just, you know, is just that.
She's more alike than you're different.
Yeah. She has to get away from her family, get away from her background to really appreciate them and to understand them and accept that she is part of this big, crazy family. And then she ends up doing the same things with her children that were done with her, sending her daughter to Greek school and, you know, to really appreciate all of that.
Right. The whole circle comes complete towards the end.
It's the great circle of life.
Yep. Circle of life. Yes, it does damn near appeal to everybody. Everyone who watches this, who's got any sort of ethnic background, is going to find it's a mirror.
A twisted
distorted mirror, yes, but still a mirror. You'll recognize yourself in there somewhere.
Yeah. Got anything else? Anything else you want to add to it?
Nope.
Does anybody from the chat room have anything they want to add? In the meantime, Darren, why don't you tell us a little bit about the movies you've been seeing lately?
Yes. Okay. For those of you who are in the St. Louis area, you realize the last week or so we had the St. Louis Film Festival going on. It just completed up this last Sunday. I saw about 20 different films, features, documentaries, and whatnot. Some big names and some not so big names. If you're in the St. Louis area during the second week of November, it's worthwhile checking out. They had some really great stuff this year. About the best two feature films I saw was one called Formosa Betrayed. Watch for that probably next year. It just got a distribution deal. And another one, another little quiet movie, similar in a similar vein to this, an independent called The Only Good Indian, which had an interesting look at a little known period of American history. Of how Native Americans were basically educated, at sometimes at the point of a gun. Mm. Really great acting, great twist in a Indians versus Cowboys story. It's a reverse take on The Searchers. If you've ever seen that movie, well worth watching for. It'll be out on DVD probably by end of December, 1st of January. Hmm. They've not picked up a distribution deal at this time. But again, watch for it. It's worthwhile watching. Bunch of great documentaries. One which was on the Apollo 11 moonwalks. It was called The Wonder of It All, which had the interviews of the surviving Apollo astronauts. 30 years after the Apollo program, these guys have mellowed out and changed in all sorts of strange ways. A really bizarre documentary I saw was about the activist known as Wavy Gravy. totally bizarre. Look back at a very interesting time in the 60s when activism really meant something. And did not become just open your wallet and send us more money sort of thing. Mm-hmm. Activists were really active.
Yeah.
And they were out on the streets being active. Rather disturbing documentary called Playground about the problem of child molestation and child trafficking. That one really messed me up. If you do have a chance to see it in an IFC channel or something like this, do so. You'll walk away from it with a lot of doubts about humanity. Mm. A terrible, tragic story. I was disappointed in a couple of documentaries. One you can completely avoid is called The Beetle Queen Conquers Tokyo. It was a rather strange, very strange documentary, which I couldn't even...
That sounds like a horror movie.
It does.
Bad Godzilla.
It does. They did it on purpose, but it looks at a rather... rather interesting hobby in Japan of insect collecting. Mm. I mean, it does, but hey, you think it's a really, really inane topic, but Japanese are crazy about insects.
And depending on how a documentary is done and the characters mm-hmm. in them, I watched The King of Kong once.
Mm-hmm.
It's such a weird topic. But it's such a great documentary.
Because of the people involved in it.
Weird and quirky.
What was that thing we watched with Isabella Rossellini where she was dressing up as, like, the reproductive parts of animals? Oh, my God, that was the weirdest thing.
We reviewed that.
Did you?
Like, that first sequence, it was, like, green porn or something like that?
Yeah, something like that. Oh, my gosh, it was the weirdest thing.
But overall, I had a really good time there. Interesting people. I go to these film festivals. I have a friend down there who's named Brett, who is a venue captain, and we trade notes at the end of the day when he's there about all the interesting comments he gets from the people coming out of it. And for the second year in a row, he's got a complaint from someone that there were too many foreign films in the International Film Festival.
Nice. That's fantastic. That is amazing.
It is amazing. I can't understand what they miss about that international component of it.
That does not speak well for our city.
Well, it just is some of the quirky bunch that he gets. Well, there was a couple of big name releases. Precious was also premiered here along with the new George Clooney movie, Up in the Air. Up in the Air was filmed here in St. Louis. And it made its premiere here. Unfortunately, it was completely sold out long before the film festival started. The same with Precious. Reading just the reviews of it so far is that is going to be one hell of a horror movie.
I don't know what it's about at all.
It's about this girl from, I think, inner city New York, Harlem or something. I know that's where the real actress is from, so I might be confusing it with the character. And she's abused by her mother and her father. She's illiterate and... I don't know if she's just a big girl or if she's pregnant.
She's both.
And it's just the story of her really horrible life. But it's supposed to be just fantastic.
Well, also on the social worker who's trying to pull her out of this situation.
A lot of Mariah Carey's in it, and they said she's actually good. It's not another glitter thing that she's actually good in it. Monique, who's the comedian, plays mm-hmm. her mother, and it's supposed to be just fantastic.
It's 180 degrees. Yeah, it's 180 degree. Role for her. There was one also I wish I could have seen, which was called The Imaginarium of Dr. Parnassus, which was Heath Ledger's absolute last movie.
And that's coming out soon.
Yes. Unfortunately, it was sold out.
Oh.
Unfortunately, they put it in the smallest theater in the Tivoli, the 250-seat Cinema 3.
You almost have to wonder what they were thinking.
I asked someone about that, and he said the movie studio wouldn't let it be put in the larger theater.
Oh.
Again, I guess
they wanted to limit the audience.
Right, they want to limit the audience. But the thing sold out 5 weeks before the festival started.
Incredible.
Yeah.
Is that a bad sign when they only let it be in a small?
No,
like,
no.
Is it kind of like they won't let it be reviewed?
No. It's very likely that they don't want the story leaking out.
Well, it's also if they don't know how the audience is going to take it, they'll put it in a small venue like that. So you kind of limit the size of the right. comments.
Well, yeah, and you can kind of form a test audience out of a smaller size.
Whether this was a final print, a test screening, or whatever,
right.
They may be, again, several versions of this movie out there that's being run in the festival circuit to see what it's what's happening. Mm-hmm. And maybe they'll, again, re-edit it. Managing expectations.
Yeah, Chris is saying it's managing expectations. That's another good thing, too, because it's the follow-up to The Joker, yeah. You know? Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, he had such a great performance in the role as The Joker, and then this was the follow-up to it, and he was filming this when he died.
Right.
They actually had to replace him. For parts of the movie, if the movie is that good, and they have 1,000 people coming out of the movie screaming at the top of their lungs how good it is, your expectations of the movie are going to shoot way up. And if it is anything less than stellar,
right,
it's gonna be a disappointment.
Right. Well, they're again the Heath Ledger left such a huge footprint behind. It's going to be tough to see how anything after Dark Knight can really ever measure up.
And also, it is a Terry Gilliam film.
Right.
This could very likely be Terry Gilliam's best box office for
since
any
Brazil.
Film.
Yeah.
For any film he's ever done, even with Brazil. I mean, this is likely going to be his best box office. Just people coming to see it just the morbidity factor of
Heath Ledger.
Of Heath Ledger being dead.
Well, we'll see how it does when it finally hits the big screens again.
And also to see how they handle replacing him. But from what I understand about the story and how they do it, it kind of makes sense in the context of the film. So,
well, anyways, it was sold out. Apparently, it did fairly well. I didn't hear any negative comments from anybody so far.
So how long did the film festival last? How many days were you
10 days.
There? 10 days, okay.
I'm pretty much there about, I saw 20 movies, about 1 to 2 every night, sometimes more.
Wow.
The animation blocks this year and the short programs were really good. One to look out for, if you see it out there, it's called Logomania. If you can find out where if you see it on YouTube or something like that, do catch that one. It is totally insane. It's a movie made up totally of logos.
Interesting.
It's like the characters?
Yes, the characters. Yes, Ronald McDonald shoots up a Pizza Hut and is chased down by the Michelin Men.
Nice.
It is pretty whack.
That sounds fantastic.
Yes, he escapes in the Federal Express truck. And, of course, it's all sorts of... The SO lady rescues Big Boy. And the Pringle brothers are in the restaurant making snide comments about the SO lady.
Wow.
It's a totally insane movie.
That sounds like something that would be fun to watch, though.
It is. It's not very... It's a short, but it's one of the most strange... It was one of the more popular ones there.
So, relating the experience of going to a film festival where you've been to, like, 20 movies over the course of 10 days... to like the Oscar showcase that we do in February, where we see 5 movies in one day. How do you relate that experience? Is it similar or?
It's a little more intense.
Really?
Yeah. Well, you're breaking it about 2 to 3 movies over almost a week and a half.
Yeah.
And rather than just getting it all over in 10 hours, so you're and also
13
changing
13 hours.
Yes. Well, you're also changing venues.
Oh.
You know, like in the case of, I'd have one movie, say it's starting at 7 o'clock at the Tivoli, and the other one, it starts at 9 o'clock at the High Point. So you got 30 minutes to get out of the one and get to the other.
And about how far apart are they? Just for reference for folks who don't
know. About 5-6 miles, but it's all surface streets.
Right.
And you got to find a place to park. And in the case of the High Point, the only place you can park is in the bank across the street.
Mm.
Because the High Point's a single screen theater.
Yeah, I think the High Point is where I first saw Natural Born Killers. Mm-hmm. Went to an early screening of it because I had a buddy who worked at a radio station, and so we got like special, you know, like press pass kind of deal. Yeah. Still don't get press passes for this, but I got a press pass for.
Yeah, they had about four venues this year. They had Webster, Tivoli, High Point, Plaza Frontenac, and Brown Hall down at Washington University.
Oh, okay. That's a good spread of venues.
Right, and of course, they also do occasionally at the Museum of Art. Now, they had the crew. One special feature they had this year was they had the crew of MS3K, who did Cinematic Titanic down at... St. Charles Family Arena.
Right.
But they were also there, too, doing a panel.
Oh, cool. Yeah, they were not this past year, but the year before they were at
Archon. Yeah, right. And this is, again, the same lineup.
Right.
And if you're into filmmaking, they have all sorts of sidebars and workshops. If you're into making movies, you can meet the filmmakers. You can get some tips from them. In many of the documentaries and feature films, the directors... Writers came in afterwards and talked about the movie for a little while afterwards.
Yeah, I was gonna ask if there were many Q&As.
Yes, there were quite a few of them.
Cool.
Yeah, again, it's well worth your time to go. And if you can't see a whole lot of them, you at least catch a couple of them. You're going to see some stuff that you're not going to really find elsewhere. Some of these things only exist on the film festival circuit, and others will eventually move out of it. But you may see something that's. Oscar-worthy while it's still in its infant stages.
Yeah, you may see you may see some of these documentaries go on to be Oscar nominated.
Well, this is the only way they can be, because film festivals is accredited for
because they
for
have
nomination
to be shown, because they have to be shown in a theater.
Right.
They have to be in a theater first before they get to DVD or television.
Right. Right, they have to be actually in the general public as a paying audience, and then they are then they can be considered for Oscar nomination. So this, a lot of the shorts and documentaries, this is the only place you're going to see them is in the film festival circuit. And again, it's worthwhile. You might see some early stuff, get to meet some interesting filmmakers there, and find out kind of the mechanics of how so many things got started.
Cool, very cool. All right, well, thank you for that. Yeah, I think we'll go ahead and call this a night.
Yep.
Anything you guys want to add about Greek Wedding?
Nope. Just if you want a nice little comedy that won't bust your brain or make you angry or make you feel good at the end, this is a good one.
Yeah, and it's fairly family friendly. There's a couple of questionable lines, and like the sequence when the brother and the cousin tell him, you know, to say
nice boobs,
I've got three testicles, things like that. You know, a 12-year-old will snicker at those. It's not tragic if they see this stuff. See, next week we're doing Fight Club.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll just have to see what happens after that. We'll
pick some.
We'll know more by then. So, all right.
Opa.
Opa.
Opa.